to complete what I will ask say, a question about how you immerse yourself in a space to analyze it. What method do you use? Is there an element of improvisation, or is there a system in place over time? Do you analyze in the moment, or does the thought come afterward? A question about urbanization. Would you say that there are two ways of seeing it, one by an architecture of affects, and a second by an architecture of concrete?
Of concrete?
Yeah.
De béton, d'accord. Ok.
And a question about communitarianism. Do you believe that there is an amalgam that is made between ideological communities and territorial communities? A kind of will of some people to disqualify other people by touching them with communitarianism so that they do not have access to the life of the city.
And to finish this question is like I was wondering myself like how urbanized without being too urban is like, okay, I'm gonna read, it's gonna be better, I think. How to urbanize without being too urban, and should we urbanize by being less urban? And urban, is it a term to redefine, to recreate, because we're like doomed to development and new cities and so, and all this mode of standardization of construction. And I think like there is a lot of the architecture which is impact people in their behavior, in their way to live city. Also, I think people also, but I think like architecture do a lot. And so it's like, it's terrible because I don't know how to explain, but it's like the new cities and yeah, the way that we urbanize now is like kind of a condemnation. Oui. I don't know how we say
to condemn.
To condemn.
To condemn. Condamner.
And yeah, it's condemned, it's condemned, it's doomed people. And so yes, my question is like, do we have to recreate a new world which is replace urban? Or is it something that we have to rethink? Or for sure it's something that they have to be rethink, I think, but it's like how being less urban, but we have to, in a way, but maybe it's another way, I don't know. So yeah, that was my question. One of my questions, I was wondering about the text after, like, yes, but how, and yes. Sorry if it's a bit, I don't know if I'm clear, but I am clear or not?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. No, voilà. And I don't know if you want to take the time to answer now or if you want to present. I don't know. It's up to you.
But we can also go back to. On peut retourner à vos questions.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's a lot of things. So it's just, okay, we have an overview of the whole. Voilà. Your questions, then you enter when you want and as you like.
I mean, do you already know the answers to the questions you're asking?
Answer?
Est-ce que tu connais déjà la réponse à la question que tu poses?
Ah, no. If not, it's not going to be a question. It's the problem. I think I want to work on it for sure in my life. But yes, I think it's the start maybe today. So. You have an answer?
No, there's a lot of things there. I mean, a lot of very interesting observations and issues and dilemmas.
Uh,
I mean, because first and foremost, it is a kind of question. You know, the urban is a question. It's not a category. It's not a settled concept. It's not really a thing in and of itself, as much as it is a kind of question. And the question has to do with in some ways that if you have so the easy route out is that you know you look at the urban as a kind of density of things, a density of intersections, amongst things, amongst land, amongst people, amongst non-human entities, amongst materials of all kinds, services. I mean, you can make a list that's 100 miles long, of which the urban is a kind of intersection of. And those intersections produce particular kinds of material, affective, social, political. It produces a lot of things that are also 100 miles long. Realities, entities. But what makes it a kind of dilemma is that you can start with identifying specific things of which the urban is an intersection of. So we can take you and you and you and you and you, and we can talk about an intersection of your bodies, of your histories, of your inclinations, of your desires, of your behaviors. And then we can come up with something. We can come up with a disposition based on that intersection. But that route means I have to identify you as discrete somethings. That you're something that is essentially different from you as a something, and different than you as a something, and different from you as a something. We can do that, and we do that all the time. But in some ways, is the intersection itself really an intersection of these different things, or does a kind of intersection produce the somethings? Because we don't start with the somethings, we start with the intersection, with the interrelation, that kind of coming together, that kind of touching, that kind of gathering, that kind of process of a process of densification, a process of, you know, the philosophical term might be concrescence, you know. And it is out of that then produces those somethings. Because you don't start with the somethings, you start with the process. And out of that process will produce things that we can call land. But after all, what is land? You know, you can think about land as, you know, what's under this building. But we can also consider land to be computer simulations. You know, that are a territory. We can also consider land as some kind of abstraction. So when I say that the urban is a kind of question or a dilemma and a question, it's like these two things are not the same. You know, it's sort of like paradoxical. It's almost like, you know, does the horse come before the donkey, or the donkey come before the... Does the process, does the densification, does the agglomeration, does the intersection, does this kind of movement, because it is a kind of movement, Is this a movement of discernible and identifiable discrete things that then produce something, that then produce particular kinds of dispositions, or is that movement something of which it is not really possible to identify with confidence empirical discrete objects that then create what we come to see then as these kinds of categories. And so this is always in some sense the question, the dilemma that is never settled, for sure. Which raises the question about to what extent is the urban engageable, understandable, livable as a kind of settlement? Well, in many ways, common sense says that it is. We will all need a place to go to sleep tonight. You know, we all need a place to somewhere call our own, or a space that we are fairly assured that we can exercise some kind of control over without worrying all the time about some kind of interference, or that we'll be messed with, or that we'll be made so insecure that we're unable to sort of hold ourselves together. We need a hold on things. So sometimes that we can think about the dynamics and the politics of the urban as a politics of settling, of settlement. And of course, settlement is always done in relationship to something else, you know, your room, your house, as opposed to my house, my room, my space, your space. Don't get in my space. I don't want you in my space, you know. Be in your space. So there's always a kind of negotiation about the dynamics of that relationship. How close are things? How proximate are things to each other? What can be reasonably seen and felt as a kind of area, kind of world in which I exert some kind of authority over, some kind of sense of that I know what will happen in a way. But this is always a negotiation, you know. It's always a negotiation because anything that I do, anything that I declare myself to be. So what is my space? What is me? What is the me that is assigned to that I attribute to my space? Well, that is always a process of my working out, my thing, my reading into what is it, my sensing what you think about my thinking about you, thinking about me, thinking about you, thinking about me, thinking about you, thinking about me. Is never done in isolation from a kind of process of anticipating. So I'm not going to do any act in life. I'm not going to behave, do any performance without, in some sense, anticipating what the reactions around me will be. I can be more or less indifferent to that. I mean, I couldn't give a fuck sometimes about what people might think about me, but that is rarely the case, you know. Whatever I do is usually my anticipating what you anticipate me, my anticipation of you, and it goes at infinitum. So what looks to be settled, what looks to be a kind of act of settlement, is always being unsettled in a way by the very means that we try to attain that kind of being settled. But yet common sense will dictate that everything has its place. And of course the urban is replete with different kinds of technologies to decide and to reinforce that. you know, look how many, look at zoning regulations, you know, it's sort of, this is a place for residence, this is a place for commerce, this is a place for industry, this is a place for, so one tries to settle the way in which things are to be related to each other by trying to attribute to them or assign them a particular kind of space or a particular kind of territory. And then we can read what is appropriate for me to do and to act and what my possibilities are and what my role is in life by these kinds of attributions of territories or zones or spaces that are overlaid with particular kinds of meanings and categories. So on the one hand it is common sense. And a lot of political struggles are based upon trying to secure a place for everyone to reside within a kind of urban context. Either through, you know, the technologies of property ownership or rent or even squatting or so people will make all different kinds of claims on having a kind of ability to be settled. Those claims vary. You know, I was here first, so I'm the original people, so this is my by genealogy, by history, this is my right to be here. Or I have a piece of paper that demonstrates that I have tenure, I own this, and that ownership gives me particular kinds of rights to control both that space and me as well. But we know that these kinds of matters of definition, of categorization, of things being settled, are really never settled for sure. We know that in most cities across the world that issues of tenureship are oftentimes contested, that people can make all different kinds of claims, that they can present all different kinds of pieces of paper, that in some ways gives them some kind of right. In many cities, if you have a piece of land, you built a house. If your uncles and cousins and aunts, you know, brought food and helped put the roof on and helped extend plant flowers around the house, and you pass away, all those people have a claim on that land because they have been part of making it what it is today. They may not have a piece of paper, but they can go to court and by demonstrating the relationship and the what they contributed, that gives them some kind of, and oftentimes then the final determination of who can use that land for what remains in courts for many years. It refuses in some ways to be settled. We know that if you buy a property and you go to the bank and you get a mortgage, you own that property. But in some ways, you have to pay off the bank for the loan that they gave you. Well, what you pay, that is, if ownership means that you pay, that this has a certain kind of price, then what sets the price? Well, sometimes it's not just a relationship between you and the bank. Those mortgages are often bundled together with mortgages of other people having in the same situation across the world or across the city or across the, you know, whatever that is, bundled together. And those bundles are invested in by financial institutions for profit, or even for a loss if they need to have a, you know. So in some ways the ownership of that, even though you continue to pay the bank, and most mortgages are not fixed, you know, they're variable, the price often depends on the outcome of thousands of other claims that are made on thousands of other properties in places that you don't even know. So I'm just mentioning this to say that even the terms of ownership are oftentimes never settled for sure. So these are sort of the practicalities of the practicalities of sort of everyday politics of the question of settlement. And it's not that we don't want to focus on residents feeling secure and having a place and attaching themselves to that place and feeling significantly attached that they will take responsibility for it, that they will take care of it, that they will use it as a kind of platform through which they can develop the lives of their families, their households, that they can make contributions with feeling that sense of security. But in some ways it is only part of the story. Because in some ways the density of settlements, the density of people in place, always produces unanticipated outcomes that have to be in some ways addressed and responded to. And this is also because that, you know, when settlements entail not just one property, not just one piece of land, not just one household, but multiple households, within districts, you mentioned the notion of districts before, so districts that have been made over time by households that might have had some relationship to each other, people coming from the same rural areas or from other parts of some region. Districts that are formed by people who have similar occupations. They all work at the same factory or a group of factories. Districts that are formed from people of sort of common ethnic backgrounds. Districts that are formed because developers or the state cleared a piece of land and allocated plots to random people, you know, that didn't have any relationship to each other, that over time try to make different kinds of relationships with each other, either through forms of belonging, through common associations, institutions, or oftentimes different kinds of economic activities that had some kind of relationship to each other. But the point I'm trying to get at here is that in some sense the ability of a district or a territory to function means that not everyone can do the same thing. Because if everyone does the same thing, then the ability to do anything begins to atrophy. That is, you know, just if all of us in the same room, if we all do the same thing all the time, there's why are we even with each other? What's the point? We're not going to learn anything from each other. We're not going to be stimulated or provoked or challenged or triggered or lured into thinking something else or to trying something else. So the whole point is that we cohere, we become some kind of entity, related entity through our differences and our divergences. And the same with different districts as well, that in some ways that the agreement that even if people had a series of rules and norms which governed what they were to do with each other, which specified their responsibilities to each other, either in terms of gender, adults and children, workers, non-workers, I mean, even though we know well that these kinds of norms and rules exist, that the ability of a district to function as some kind of larger entity depends upon people being allowed and enabled to pursue their own relationships with those things that are outside any particular district. So in some sense, the integrity, the ability of some place to function also depends on things being unsettled. That the ability of a functional settlement to be settled requires a large degree of unsettling in terms of what it is that people do in their everyday lives and their relationship to a larger world. So just what I'm suggesting is that What we see as something that is settled, where you have land that seems easily divided, institutionally consolidated, where you have a specific kind of built environment with its rules and regulations, that's where things look settled, where they look like they have a kind of endurance over time, by virtue of them being settled and predictable, where everyone seems to know what the game is and what's expected of them, and everyone knows what the rules are, and everyone has a sense of their place and their position, that the very ability of that settlement to be settled really depends upon a kind of constant and continuous unsettling on the part of the everyday perspectives and behaviors and networks and relationships and affiliations and activities of everything that belongs there. That there can never be anything that is fixed by virtue of being fixed. That something is fixed only by the multiplicity of different kinds of relationships that any component of that fixture has with a kind of larger world of operations. So in my work, I've been interested in the kind of locus of that kind of unsettling. What is it? What's the sort of substrate? What is the kind of continuous stream, the sense of movement, which continuously has to recalibrate, continuously has to find a way to deal with each other, not as kind of frozen positions, but things that are always in movement. I think a major shift has happened in recent years in many cities where it becomes clear the extent to which movement and circulation and mobility are at the heart of urbanization processes. Where people themselves, residents themselves, increasingly decline, refuse, or are wary about, maybe more wary and anxious about, putting a lot of their resources and attention into consolidating something that is in place. The priority for many inhabitants has clearly been okay, I need somewhere to park my things, or I need somewhere to park my aged parents, or I need some place with an address for pragmatic reasons, because an address still has pragmatic necessity. But in my life and in my head, that I'm not gonna invest a lot of my time and effort and energies into making sure that this particular place lasts. And part of that is because, you know, the speed of change, the speed of the transformation of urban economies and demographic shifts and the speeding up of basically life itself partly means that I'm not quite sure what this is going to mean for me in the long run. I mean, look at when we, maybe this was different years ago, but look at now. If you're going to think about what kinds of things do I need to think about and consider in order for me to be able to do something with my life that I feel fairly confident about? What do I have to pay attention to? Well, I think increasingly we all have to pay attention to more and more things, that perhaps more and more things become relevant. More and more variables become relevant. More and more factors become salient. It's just not me and my household and my particular neighborhood or even my particular city. I can't live my life just paying attention to that and thinking that somehow I will make it, or somehow I will be able to elaborate a life that's either worth living or somewhere secure. Who knows? You know, look at just what happened with, you know, the banking system in the last 2 months. You know, the way in which, you know, look at what happens when a head of state decides he wants to circumvent the legislative process and try to, you know, run through a major shift in terms of social policy. Just think of the implications of what's going on in France now for someone sitting in Conakry and thinking about, okay, will I have some money available to borrow to, you know, buy a herd of cows maybe, you know, next month? Somehow every decision we make, the variables and factors involved are so expansive I can't keep track of it anymore. And so then for many urban residents, you know, if I'm going to put all of my eggs in one basket, if I'm going to think about consolidating my life in a particular place, what will that mean? What can I anticipate? I don't know. I'm not so sure anymore. It becomes harder and harder to tell. So the better bet is for me to distribute myself across different kinds of networks, different kinds of places, different kinds of... I mean, Jean-Christophe knows well, even in one of the world's poorest cities, in Kinshasa, people with very little money, you know, they'll try to get a piece of land, you know, like, you know, 50 kilometers out in the middle of nowhere. But then they have to hold on to it, because if they're not there, then someone's going to steal it. So they put a family member there, and then they think, well, this is where the city is going. But then they realize, well, maybe that's not where the city is going. Maybe it's going this direction. So then they go 60 kilometers this way, and then they buy a small piece of it, and then they have to have another family member stay there, otherwise it... So people are really spreading out, where households are, you know, what becomes a household is no longer something that's really in place, but rather distributed across many different places, many different itineraries. things are unsettled. I mean, the reality of how one makes it in a city with, and what can one anticipate is always, in a sense, being unsettled. But perhaps this was there from the get-go, you know, and we just didn't realize it. But whether or not that's the case, it is this kind of. And then you ask, well, what is the urban in the midst of this kind of unsettling? And that's why I'm saying that the whole notion of the urban itself is being unsettled. I mean, where does it begin? Where does it end? Where does the, you know? You can drive outside of Saigon for 150 kilometers and the city is not ending. You're obviously in what looks to be rural areas, but you've seen one house all the way. You can drive from Douala in Cameroon all the way to the Nigerian border. It's not crowded, but house. Is this rural? Is it urban? Is it, you know? People have some kind of connection with each other across an expanse of 100, 150 kilometers. You sometimes ask, who are your neighbors? And people will identify people 100 kilometers away as their neighbor. I mean, this would never happen in Queens, in New York, you know, 50 years ago. You ask someone who's their neighbor and they'll point to maybe one or two people either side of it. So what is a neighbor? What is, you know, so this sort of unsettling of the question of what is urban and what is not. And then just because things are next to each other, you know, we think about the density of the city, you know, so that we think about these densities that things next to each other are going to have some kind of relationship with each other. Well, that might have been true, and it probably is still true to a large extent. But increasingly, just because things are physically close to each other doesn't mean that they have any relationship, you know. I mean, I've lived in a flat in London for the last couple of years on a floor. I have absolutely no idea over 3 years who is living next to me or next to them. I've never seen them. I don't even know if they've changed hands a million times. I have no clue. And then once you get even out into the expanses of the city, you have upscale, you know, mansions right next to squatter communities, right next to industrial areas, right next to migrant hospitals, right next to mega towers. And on one level, you can, if you really search hard, you can see maybe that there is some kind of connection between all these things. But you really have to search hard, because on the surface in everyday life, you don't see any connection between them at all, but they're right next to each other. So even the notion of density as a kind of defining attribute of an urban which brings things together and makes things intersect and makes them give rise to something new is something of which is itself a kind of, which is itself a kind of ongoing question. And so what does it mean then to endure this kind of moment? What does it mean to get through this kind of moment? And that's a tricky question too, because so many, many neighborhoods that I've worked with in some cities, they built things over time. They built things from scratch. They were once evicted from where they were living, they were displaced to another part of the city. And incrementally, slowly, through people dealing with each other, they built things. They built livelihoods, they built jobs, they built relationships, they built institutions, step by step, paying attention to each other, letting each other have some kind of space to bring new things to the table. But I was like, really been surprised over the past couple of years, the way in which people still feel pride, they feel these things are valuable. But they're moving out. And they're moving out into circumstances which are much less clear. And you ask them, well, why are you doing this for? You made something. And sometimes they'll talk about, oh, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to keep relationships going. Because we built something that seems to be so successful, a lot of other people want in on it, and businesses move in, and you know, they take advantage of our economic success, and then the balance between commercial and residential functions is tipped, and then sometimes it's just too much work, and but we still feel pride about it. It still works, but you're leaving it. And the most common response is, well, that's true, but by virtue of focusing on keeping this thing going, we're not focusing on where the city is going. And what we need to do is we need to figure out where are things going? And we have to put ourselves in the position to be able to really see that. And not that they have a clear image of it, but they know that by virtue of staying put and investing in staying put, they're not in a position of being able to really see, to really orient themselves to. And so there's a lot of fluidity then, a lot of provisional, a lot of hedging, a lot of speculation. And this is not just amongst people with some kind of resources. These are working class people, you know. People who try to hold down five different jobs at the same time. They're always working, they're always moving, they're always hustling, but always in different parts of the city with different kinds of. So there's this kind of moment of unsettling. But again, within a context where but at the same time, where there's a lot of gridlock at the same time. Ministries that, you know, you have to still, no matter how smart city technologies they use, they're still stuck in these sort of archaic notions of how you have to fill out a million forms, or about relationships between police and judges and jails and courts and social services and welfare and health clinics and ways that are really, really stuck. Where you have a different kind of unsettling. The unsettlement is not so much about what those things look like. But the unsettling is that because they no longer can do their job, they no longer can really, really function. They're really caught in a kind of. If you want to see a film that really represents this in the most horrifying terms, take a look at a film called The Law of Tehran, where they attempt to within this, you know, large city of 13 million. Basically give a kind of representation of just how stuck things are. Where things are really unsettled, not because they're fluid and in motion and move, but just because they're stuck. And you can't really, and you really, no one can seem to extricate themselves from something that is absolutely unbearable. So I'm not trying to say that in some ways this unsettling is a kind of as a romance, is a kind of new opening necessarily. It is partly a kind of remaking of all that we think what the urban is, but we also have to pay attention that it coincides with a kind of remarkable and often unbearable sense of gridlock. And so endurance is how you operate in the middle of that. The middle of something that seems to be all over the place, provisional, temporary, always in motion. and a kind of institutional reality where just things just don't work, and I'm really stuck. I'm not addressing many things, I suppose, but just remind me of those that I'm not, and I'll try to come back.
About of my question is like to